Hello, welcome to August podcast with myself, Mark Morton, and Norman Allison. We've both been spending the summer getting ready for the autumn courses, trying to watch what the revenue have been doing. But August, to be fair, has been a pretty quiet month in terms of HMRC, annual holidays and so on. So what we were going to do was have a quick look at one or two of, I suppose, the recurring themes in the tax world that will come across. There's a little bit of SDLT, a little bit of MTD, etc. And we thought we'd just drog through those, whet your appetite a little bit for our autumn tax update courses. So without any further ado, SDLT is the one that we've picked first, really because I think, Norman, probably recurring in terms of the courts, I think probably fair to say.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, Mark? We've seen a couple of these over recent years at the first tier tribunals, etc. So, yeah, absolutely, very much seems to be a bit on the radar of HMRC at the minute, doesn't it?
It does. Explain to me as a non-lawyer then, because it used to be that, you know, SDLT was a preserve of lawyers, and now it seems if you go to a lawyer says, ask your accountant. So, what are these SDLT courses cases actually banging on about then?
Well, really, fundamentally, what it's all about is the argument that the property or the dwelling has mixed use. And on that basis, you'll be entitled to tap into the commercial rates of SDLT, which obviously can be considered, are lower. So that some of the cases we're seeing that we've seen come through the tribunals, the amount of SDLT at stake is pretty significant. I mean, the case I'll just be talking through in a minute, the revenue sought to increase the SDLT liability by the best part of £161,000. They're pretty material numbers.
Right, so these are big properties then with, well, I suspect some with lots of land attached as well, are they, by the sound of it?
Yes, pretty much that's exactly what we're now seeing going through. Absolutely, that's the case.
So how successful are these cases being generally?
Well, it's interesting. We had one last year, which, interestingly enough, was the taxpayers were actually the founders of the Goo Chocolate brand, and that actually case went in favour of HMRC, and that was a significant amount of tax due at stake. But the case I've got to talk about just now has actually gone in favour of the taxpayer, so that saved them. We're going to save them about £161,000.
Right. Okay. So what had gone on in this case then?
Right. This was the first tier tribunal case back in May. It was a husband and wife, the Sutter Wallers, and effectively what this was to do, they purchased a property called Woodlands House. That was back in December 2020. And in their self-assessment, they treated the property as residential and non-residential, so effectively mixed use for SDLT. Revenue didn't like that, had a little nose around, bit of an inquiry, and they concluded that the property was in fact residential on the basis there is no non-residential element. And as I say, they were looking to increase the liability by the best part of £161,000. Now, some of the more detailed points in relation to this particular case was their argument was that the property actually consisted of a paddock to the rear of the property, and that apparently had been identified in red on the plan that had been annexed. And Woodlands House itself, which was the residential house and garden, and that was identified apparently blue on the plans that were submitted to the tribunal. Taxpayers at the tribunal actually made reference to the sales brochure, and there was a view on the back page, a picture on the back page, and apparently it clearly showed that the paddock was beyond the tennis court, and in fact there was a hedge that divided the two pieces of land, and apparently, well, there was only a small gate that gave access to the paddock from the house. And one of their key arguments was, in fact, that they'd agreed to let the paddock for a period of a year. We're talking about a rent of about £1,000 per annum. They considered that to be commercial. Really, fundamentally, what it boiled down to was the grazing by the horses meant that they didn't have to worry about the cutting of the grass in the paddock at all. Now, to build on their argument, they argued that the dwelling house with the garden and the tennis court effectively formed a coherent whole on its own. And on that basis, the paddock was not performing any function in relation to the dwelling house. And on top of that, it could not actually be seen from the dwelling. So it could not be said to be part of the dwelling. Now, the revenue obviously disagreed. Their argument was that land registry documents actually showed all of the land, including the paddock, was comprised in one title, since at least, they said, from at least 1978. And on top of that, the taxpayers, the revenue we're looking at, the taxpayers had stated that they were not aware of any commercial agreements in place for the use of that paddock prior to completion, which indicated that the entire property was, prior to the grazing lease, considered as domestic. Now, the revenue's view here was that grazing agreement was actually irrelevant. It was an irrelevant factor because it was entered into after the completion. What basically happened, the tribunal, they observed that the revenue had actually maintained that the entire property being residential at the time of completion, based on the fact that the property was registered in a single folio and that the property was sold as an equestrian and property. But in fact, during the hearing, those two grounds were actually shown to be false. What it really boiled down to, that there were clearly two separate folios, and nowhere in that sales brochure was the word equestrian used. And finally, the tribunal did agree with the taxpayers that the grazing lease, well, it was of commercial benefit to the taxpayers. And on that basis, they agree with the taxpayers here that the revenue should not have issued that closure notice, seeking that additional £161,000. And that paddock, they agreed, was not visible from the house nor the gardens. And they agreed there's only that small gate providing access. So on that basis, the appeal was allowed for the taxpayers. As I say, that one saved them £161,000.
Right. Okay, then. So for my little two up, two down, I suspect these sorts of cases are not overly relevant. And I have to say, I feel a lot better knowing that they've got quite a nice refund on the basis of a paddock. But it seems a lot of refund in relation to, presumably, for £1,000 was a pretty small area of the overall property.
Yeah, presumably. That's absolutely right. Yeah. Rent of £1,000 per annum. Yeah, absolutely right.
I guess another day, a different judge might have said, well, you know, this is a big house with a tennis court and a paddock, and it's a house and it's a dwelling, and, you know, whether you rent it out is up to you. But
that's absolutely right. Yeah,
there you go. But good for them. But it seems to be a bit of an ongoing saga, doesn't it?
With it certainly does. Yeah, very much. Very
a lot
much.
Of claims being made on this basis, a lot of them being kicked out, I think, but a success here or there. So
that's right.
There you
that's
go. Exactly if you're right. Buying your next mansion, bear in mind the SDLT, probably, by the sound of it. So
certainly the case. Yeah.
Oh dear. So the next thing we were going to mention was HMRC service levels.
Yes.
I think something that, you know, you having been in practice and me having worked in, I'll say the revenue rather than HMRC because a bit of a different entity when I worked there. But it's something that we have all seen decline over the years.
Yes.
Parliamentary reports now saying service levels are rubbish, essentially.
Yeah.
If there's any great surprise in that. It was quite interesting, sort of around budget time, the revenue came out with I'm trying to remember what the full title was, but basically a review of the tax administration system.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things they were talking about in there was essentially digital by default, which seems to be saying that actually, you know, we will force people to go online instead of offering any other option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing, as two men who have recently amended their tax codes, and I know we've both done that for the same reason.
Yeah.
What is quite interesting, I think, in the digital tax account is the ability to amend your code is pretty limited. You know, you can really only do it if you want to drop a benefit or include a benefit. You can't do it for lots of other reasons.
Mm.
And it's quite interesting, this whole, well, we'll force you online. But of course, their online systems are not great either.
No.
Quite where this will end becomes quite interesting. I think the other thing that I noticed, do you get a tax return? No, I should have asked you this. I guess
yes, currently I do anyway.
A man of your worth, I'm sure, does. and certainly the odd thing, having filed, because I've been a good little boy and I filed my 22-3 return well in time, obviously, because I'm due repayment. If I owed them money, I would have left it till the 30th of Jan. But but having filed it, interestingly, at the end, I've now had a message saying I've basically been kicked out of self-assessment for the first time in 20 years,
right?
Quite amazingly.
Is this because of the threshold being increased?
I couldn't possibly comment on the reasons why they've kicked me out, but I mean, they've kicked me out, clearly. But the interesting thing, and that's been obviously a theme of the tax system for many years, where they seem to want to drop more and more people out of the system. But of course, the more they drop you out, it's not easy to put yourself back in the tax system or account for things online in a very straightforward manner. And of course, what we've got in conjunction with this going on is cutting in the dividend allowance.
Which
brings hundreds of thousands of people, you know, increase in additional rate, or I say increase, but, you know, reduction of the threshold, so more people paying it. We've got reduction in CGT annual exemption.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things are saying people will have to pay more tax, some of them outside the tax system. Of course, at the same time, the revenue kicking more people out, which seems to be storing up in my mind a bit of failure to notify going forward for, you know.
Yes. No, good point.
Being kicked out the system, and they got £1,001 of dividends, and for the last 10 years, they paid no tax on that. You know, how many are conversant with the tax system to say, well, I better ask for a tax return quick, kind of thing, you know, and no great surprise. Some of the practitioners that are listening to this will know that the revenue switched off their agent helpline for a little while. Didn't really explain why they'd switched it off, as far as I know, just said, well, we're not answering the phone. They switched off their VAT registration helpline permanently. And their reasoning for that is 85% of the calls they were getting was chasing up VAT registrations that hadn't been processed. So rather than say, we'll answer the phone and tell you where it is, they just won't answer the phone at all, which I'm not sure is entirely great customer service. So it all seems a little bit strange, it has to be said, but I think an indication really that the revenue is, you know, really just a compliance organisation now.
Yes.
Yep. Not there to help the layperson. So, yeah, a lot going on in the revenue, not entirely clear where it's going to end up. If we, it's a bit like MTD. We've discussed MTD a lot over the years, haven't we? Not so much the electronic record keeping. You know, if the revenue want to force that issue, that's up to them. I don't think it will improve, you know, record keeping standards personally, but that is one issue. Making you then send in that rubbish quarterly. There's always been a complete waste of everyone's time. And interestingly, I think the next point that you were going to move on to was the so-called death of MTD, wasn't it?
That's absolutely right. Yes, that NAO report, a few months ago, that was published, wasn't it? I mean, it was a scathing report, as you well know, about the revenue's handling of MTD. And I think one of the striking one of the key parts of the report was just talking about way back in 2016, the estimate of what it would actually cost to bring it all in for VAT, self-assessment, but also CT, was in the region of £226 million. Well, 2023, that has increased to the best part of £1.3 billion. So it's way over, absolutely way over budget.
Which, let's face it, on pretty much all government projects is always the case.
I think
the thing that was interesting in that report to me is, you know, comments along the lines of the revenue have never properly costed, as you allude to. But also the so-called yield, you know, the benefits of this financially for the revenue. Well, they have never really been, you know, explained properly where these figures came from. The so-called tax gap. Well, the so-called tax gap is never proven. I think one of the things that sticks in my mind is One of the they did statistical analysis on MTD for VAT.
Yeah.
So looking at what they thought may have been yielded from the whole rigmarole for VAT. And I think the figure that they stuck at, they were prepared to put their name to average increase in VAT bills for SMEs of £19 a quarter.
That's right. I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. They did admit that actually it could be lower than that as well, rather strangely. But, you know, if you said to most businesses, look, you can do all this rubbish for MTD or just write as a check for £100 a year more, it would be cheaper to do the latter. You know, so it's been a really odd supposed project. And of course, a lot of the people we talk to on courses, you know, particularly the face-to-face where you're having a chat, you know, before the courses and so on.
Yeah.
I think a lot of practitioners would think this is about the payment of tax.
Yes.
And and quarterly payment of tax was dropped years ago. That is really what they want. Why don't they just change the current system to quarterly payments on account and say, you know, you've got to keep your records electronically ultimately, but leave the rest alone.
Yeah.
I think you go back to the service levels. If we were French, we'd have set fire to something years ago. but we've moaned and groaned about it. And you just hope the penny is starting to drop that this project is a bit of a nonsense, you know, and always has been.
Yeah. Well, I noted in that report, they did observe that they said the plan for the 26-27 timetable is very, very challenging indeed. So probably like you, Mark, I'm meeting people on face-to-face who are just not convinced this is going to come in at all.
No. I think you know, it's a cunning plan.
Yeah.
Quite what the benefit is supposed to be to the taxpayer. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? The taxpayer is the customer. Supposedly. Mm-hmm. Well, I suspect if you survey most customers, they don't want to touch this with a barge pole. So, yes, you never know. You know, it may be deferred so long that both you and I have retired and therefore, you know, we don't care what happens subsequently. So there's always that, you know, keep pushing it back. We'll see what happens, won't we? So
we'll see. I'm meeting probably like you, Mark. I'm meeting many practitioners who are saying to me, well, I'll definitely be retired by 26, 27. So I'm not worrying about it.
No, and some people who are, you know, I've seen variants of this in the past where some are at that age where they say, I just do not want to go through another big relearning exercise. And hence, whenever it comes in, will be the end of me sort of thing. And you can't really blame people, can you? So
no, absolutely not.
Dear me. Anyway, so yes, that saga rumbles on, but certainly the politicians more generally are having their eyes opened a little bit, I think.
Right.
You do question what the oversight on all of this has been, don't you? You know, which government minister says, yes, this is a good idea then? So, and I suspect, you know, something else that that has been rumbling on for the last 20 years is IR35.
And, oh, yes, yeah.
It's quite interesting. If anybody remembers Mr. Kwarteng, I don't know what happened to him, what he's currently doing, but, you know, one of the things he said in his short tenure was he was going to get rid of, you know, the off-payrolling rules.
That's right, yeah.
The time seemed a little bit odd because obviously off-payrolling is part of a suite of, you know, IR35 was one of these things that bugs me. IR35 and off-payrolling are different. You know, you've got agency rules. Mm. You've got the pure status issue.
Yep.
And, of course, 20 years down the line, the revenue are making an issue of IR35. But what you see in the tribunals is complete inconsistency in decision. You know, you know as well as I, most of these cases have been about the the entertainment industry, news readers, sports people, and so on, who have been doing, let's face it, most of them are pretty much long-term, whatever you want to call them, of the institutions they work for, whether that's Sky or the BBC or ITV or whoever it may be. But most of them are long servers. And, of course, the revenue, I think the ones that strike me are Eamon Holmes and Lorraine Kelly. Lorraine Kelly held not to be caught.
Yeah.
It was then followed for years on the next show by Eamon Holmes, who was deemed to be caught. Well, at the end of the day, they were both fixtures of ITV for years, working on pretty similar terms.
Yeah.
And this is the, and yet, you know, one gets one decision, one gets the other. I think one of the more intriguing ones, Mr. Lineker.
That is intriguing. He had this partnership, didn't he, with his ex-missus?
Right. I was a bit surprised to find it was a partnership in the first place. And, of course, I suppose the thing that I suppose in practice, IR35 off payrolling has always been able to apply to partnerships as well. But everyone talks in terms of service companies. But the interesting point of the Lineker case is that the judges said, well, actually, he was signing the contracts in his own name.
Yes.
And the payments were made to him rather than the partnership. So he wasn't contracting through a third party, i.e. the partnership. He was just doing it directly with the BBC, which if I was still in the revenue, would say, well, that's great then. So you're an employee of the BBC then would be presumably the next argument down that line.
Yes.
But all these cases are so nuanced for people who are fundamentally doing the same thing for TV presentational work and getting completely different answers 20 years down the line, which is, frankly, a bit like the R&D fiasco, isn't it? You know, let's face it, the revenue seem the last to realise that it's being fiddled a bit. And what they then choose to do about it is tinker with the rules. But the fundamental problem is, you know, of this rubbish is not R&D.
Yeah.
How can you submit a claim in the first place? It's not really being addressed and hasn't been. You know, it's similar with IR35. The approach to status is so complicated that actually you don't know really what the answer is.
No.
Whether you should, and that becomes... Anyway, the Office of Tax Simplification has been abolished, hasn't it? So let's face it, we're not going to get any sort of answer to any of this in the near future. But you look at the things we've talked about, you know, and we all know HMRC service levels are rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that IR35, et cetera, has never really worked. Mm. And yet nobody seems able to get a grip of it and say, look, if we sort this out, fundamentally, we'll all be better off.
Very true.
Anyway, so there's a general election next year, so I'll be standing on the basis of an independent party, you know, reform MTD, reform the revenue, I think is all I can say about this. But anyway, so thank you for listening to us. I think remains to be said. We'll both be out on, you know, we'll be doing some Zoom, but we're also traveling the country in the next few months. So we'll be discussing these areas and others in a lot more detail. And hopefully one way or the other, some of you will join us. So thank you for listening to this podcast today. Take care of yourselves and hopefully we'll see some of you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Mercia podcast. For more information on this topic, please visit mercia-group.com.